Mr. Christensen.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Joanna Christensen, and I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois. I represent the appellant Irvin Robinson in this matter. This case has had a long and winding road to the court's door. As a matter of fact, it's been here four times. This is the fourth time. This is an appeal from the remand for resentencing order from this court, and addressed in appeal, particularly, or addressed in this appeal, was particularly the application of the criminal history category in the sentencing guidelines. The district court concluded at resentencing that a commentary to guideline section 2D1.5 trumped the criminal history category determination under section 4A1.1. And it is that issue that we feel is erroneous. Part of the difficulty is the language of the commentary to 2D1.5 and the language of section 4A1.2 conflicts in a certain number of matters. The commentary says that under 21 U.S.C. section 848, certain conduct for which the defendant has previously been sentenced may be charged as part of the instant offense to establish a continuing series of violations, as is one of the elements of section 848. The commentary goes on to say, a sentence resulting from a conviction sustained prior to the last overt act of the instant offense is to be considered a prior sentence under section 4A1.2 and not part of the instant offense. If in present case we have the district court considering the prior offense, which was a 1986 conviction, actually two cases for cocaine distribution, twice, once as part of the instant offense and as a criminal history. He received 3 points for criminal history based on that offense. If the court goes back to when Mr. Robinson was first indicted, count three, which is the continuing criminal enterprise count, lists a series of three violations that make up the element of a series of violations. Two of those violations are the same exact conduct that he was convicted of in 1986. One was a distribution of cocaine in March of 1984, and the other one in April of 1984. Those two distributions formed the 1986 conviction and also formed the government's basis for the elements of defense of the CCE. Now, both the government and I indicate in our brief, the Sixth Circuit has addressed this issue in United States versus Crosby. However, Crosby was decided before two important Supreme Court decisions that affect this matter, Stinson versus United States and Richardson versus United States. Richardson, of course, dealt with the CCE and what the elements of a conviction under a CCE are, making the series of violations an element and making the jury find each individual violation that made up that series of violations. Stinson, of course, dealt with the commentary and the guidelines and how these courts and the district courts are to interpret the commentary and the guidelines. Stinson says that commentary and the guidelines is to be binding unless it violates the Constitution, a federal statute, or is inconsistent with or a plainly erroneous reading of that guideline. Now, while the commentary is technically attached to section 2D1.5, our argument is that it interprets section 4A1.2 in that it specifically refers to that section and is actually entirely about criminal history category rather than the continuing criminal enterprise, which is 2D1.5. Stinson goes on to say that if the commentary and the guideline it interprets are inconsistent in that following one will result in violating the dictates of the other, the Sentence Reform Act commands compliance with the guideline, not the commentary. And that is where this case comes to its bottom line. The district court should have ruled that the guideline trumped the commentary rather than the other way around.
Those were the words of Judge Reagan that, I mean, as you described it. He said they trumped the guideline, or the commentary trumps the guideline.
Right. Trumped is actually the word he used. And it's in our appendix, in part of the transcript that has been included in our appendix. And that is erroneous in light of Stinson, in that commentary should not be able to trump a guideline if they are inconsistent. The government also relies on another case in addition to Crosby, which is the Joyner case from the Sixth Circuit. The Joyner case upheld the use of the commentary in 2B1.5. However, the issue presented to the Sixth Circuit in that case was very different than the issue presented to this court today. It was regarding the timing of the conviction and the last overt act of the criminal enterprise. We're not challenging that. We know or agree on that the conviction happened prior to the last overt act of the enterprise, which went way into the early 90s. Therefore, Joyner is not particularly helpful to this court in this matter. Finally, the government argues that the CCE guideline is similar enough to the RICO guideline, commentary to the RICO guideline, to be interpreted in the same manner. While the language of the two commentaries are similar, the RICO commentary, which is seen in the commentary to 2E1.5, goes on to say that in addition to prior sentences being treated as prior convictions rather than as part of the instant offense, the commentary says this treatment is designed to produce a result consistent with the distinction between the instant offense and criminal history found throughout the guidelines. If this treatment produces an anomalous result in a particular case, a guideline departure may be warranted. The CCE guideline does not contain that language, and I would argue that that means they are to be interpreted differently. Further, it also contains a policy statement of sorts saying that the treatment is designed to produce a result consistent with the distinction between the instant offense and criminal history, which is also what the commentary in 2B1.5 seeks to do. It says if you're going to use the prior convictions as criminal history category, they are not to be considered part of the instant offense. Unfortunately, in this case, his prior convictions made the basis of the instant offense and therefore should not have been included in his criminal history category. I notice I'm into my rebuttal time, so I will just conclude with a double counting argument, which is also raised in our brief, which the government does not address in its brief, and is actually a separate argument from our guidelines or the interpretation of the commentary argument. And even if the commentary and the guidelines and the court had not found that the commentary trumped the guidelines, this still would be double counting. The same conduct was included as relevant conduct in Mr. Robinson's offense conduct and making the basis of his base offense level, and then also counted as part of his criminal history score. That is impermissible double counting. Therefore, this case should be remanded for resentencing in front of the district court judge. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Well, you could argue, though, that criminal offense has really bears on two different facets of his behavior. First, whether he's whether he was operating a continuing criminal enterprise. That's one kind of wrongdoing. And another is whether he's a recidivist.
Correct.
Those are two separate. So the same piece of evidence is used to cast light on two separate aspects of his character.
Right. I believe
why is that double counting?
The guidelines historically make a distinction between criminal history and recidivism and then the offense that the defendant is currently being convicted on. And I think that if a prior conviction is going to be included in relevant conduct in the offense level, then it should not be included in, if it's
well,
related to...
Well, you're not addressing my point. My point is the same conduct may cast light on two different grounds for punishment. One is recidivism, one is operating a criminal enterprise.
Right. And my answer is I believe the sentencing guideline tries to draw a line between those two. Guidelines try to draw a line between those two, specifically in the chart is where it's easily seen, is that on one axis you get the conduct of the instant offense, and the other one you
well,
get the criminal history.
Well, the instant offense is being in the drug business rather than just being an occasional or isolated drug dealer. So you could say that characterizes the offense. and it doesn't just bear on his prior criminal activity.
Well, I believe that the government had used other instances of prior violations, that there would be no question that they could use his prior convictions as criminal history. But what they relied on were solely his prior convictions to support the CCE offense. And since they cannot be separated, as in other cases, this court has found in conspiracy cases that they can be separate offenses, then the prior conviction can be criminal history category.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honor, Judge Posner, in Southern Illinois, we'd say you hit the nail on the head with your question, and that is exactly what is happening here. This, the conduct that underlies the first conviction is used as part of the series of acts for the criminal continuing enterprise. The fact that he's been convicted of that conduct then also goes to criminal history. And if I can give an example, let's say you have a person engaging in a criminal enterprise from January 1st of this year, of last year, to December 31st of last year. And on January 1st, he sells cocaine. And on July 1st, he sells cocaine. That gives you the two acts, and he does the other things. He supervises five or more people, etc. And he gets arrested and convicted during that year of the act on January 1st. Then, sometime later into this year, he gets arrested and charged with a CCE. That act of selling cocaine on January 1st, for which he's been convicted, can be used as the basis for the series of acts for the continuing criminal enterprise. The fact that he has been convicted of that offense, then, under 2D1.5, says that that will go to criminal history. Let me compare that with the person who's been, does the same thing. He conducts a criminal continuing enterprise, and he sells cocaine on January 1st and again on July 1st, but he never gets arrested and he never gets charged for the individual sale of cocaine. All he gets arrested and charged with are, at the end, the continuing criminal enterprise. They've done exactly the same thing. They're both guilty of a continuing criminal enterprise, but one of them, the first example, has criminal history. You have to count it, and that's just what the guidelines say. Under those circumstances, if you've done something and been convicted of it, it's going to be counted as criminal history. And that is no different than the way it would be treated under, if you just computed criminal history under 4A1.1, because of the what we call the intervening arrest rule. A conviction is not relevant conduct if you do the act, get arrested and convicted of it, before you finish the second offense. And that's what happens here. He does the act on January 1st, he gets arrested, he gets convicted, and then he completes the continuing criminal enterprise, which is the instant offense in this case, on December 31st. If you'd extend the analogy further, let's say the same two individuals for the same year conducted a continuing criminal enterprise and did five sales of cocaine. And the first individual gets convicted of the first four of those sales, and despite all that, continues to do it, and then gets arrested of a continuing criminal enterprise. And the second individual doesn't get convicted of any of those sales. The first individual is clearly the recidivism, and that's what the guidelines say. If you've been caught and have had to pay the piper in court and had to face the charges, so to speak, then you are going to be held accountable for that in your criminal history category. And that's really all the guidelines have here, and that is entirely consistent both between the commentary to the CCE guidelines as well as the commentary to the criminal history computation because of the intervening arrest rule. If you did all those things and then get charged in December 31st with five substantive counts and a criminal and a CCE, you will obviously only be, you will have a criminal history of, there won't be a criminal history because you haven't been convicted in it previously of those acts. And that's all the guidelines say. If she's been convicted, it counts as a conviction.
I missed the significance of the intervening arrest rule. You said that the intervening arrest rule would mean the earlier act was not relevant conduct. But that doesn't
Mr. Robinson
relate
is,
here, does it?
Mr. Robinson is arguing that there's a conflict in the guidelines. And the conflict is between the commentary to the criminal continuing enterprise, 2D1.5.
That is what you're relying on.
Right. And 4A1.1, the commentary to how you compute criminal history. Now, if you, and they're saying that this under 4A1.1 is part of the underlying conduct and should be treated as conduct. That is an incorrect reading of 4A1.1. And the reason it is incorrect is 4A1.1 specifically says what they would call the intervening arrest rule. And that is that if you've committed conduct that would otherwise count as relevant conduct, but you've been arrested and convicted for it before you've completed the instant offense, then it does not count as relevant conduct, it counts as criminal history.
Right.
Which is exactly what 2D1.5 says. If you've been arrested and convicted of it before you've finished the underlying crime, it counts as criminal history. So there's no Stinson issue at all in this under these circumstances. They're both the same. Under either way, you have to come to the same result, which is that it is to be treated as criminal history.
What do you make of Judge Reagan's comment about the commentary trumps the guideline?
I think what he meant was is that I have to follow this commentary here because there is no, you might look at the guidelines and say I could do it this way, but then when you look at how the guidelines themselves explain how you interpret them, this is the way I have to do it. And in that circumstance, maybe the guidelines trump what? Maybe you should have said the guidelines trump how I otherwise would have interpreted the guidelines based on the reading of them. And that's why the commentary is there, is you have guideline language which gives you certain rules and the commentary tells you how to explain them. The same thing with the 4A1.1 intervening arrest rule.
But you don't necessarily agree with the statement that the commentary trumps the guidelines.
No, I don't, Your Honor. The commentary, obviously, and the guidelines, you know, the text have to be read together. And the commentary obviously explains how you interpret the guidelines. And in this case, I think what Judge Reagan really meant was, I have to follow what the guidelines clearly say is, what the commentary clearly says is the correct interpretation of the guideline. The government, and as far as the double counting, if I go back to my example, what Mr. Robinson would argue is that there is no counting. He would argue for zero counting. My criminal convictions don't count. But it's time to put this case to rest. He pled guilty to the CCE 10.5 years ago, and we respectfully, unless the court has any questions, urge the court to affirm
the verdict. Has the sentence changed much over the years? That's a fun fact.
Your Honor, it hasn't changed at all. We've just been up here a lot. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks, Fraser. Ms. Christian, your time expired. You may have a minute.
May it please the court. I'll address, hopefully in order, the government's argument. The first, the intervening arrest rule. Therefore, if it's an intervening arrest and conviction, does not count as relevant conduct, goes towards what the commentary to 2D1.5 is trying to achieve. But in this point, in this case, it was counted both as an element of his conviction and as a criminal history. Gave him 3 points. Therefore, you can't have it both ways. If the guideline says does not count as relevant conduct, then it cannot count as relevant conduct in his conviction, and they should have found a different way to sustain the conviction. Otherwise, then in that case, it could have counted in the criminal history, but that's not the case that we have here where it was used both. Getting to the government's arguments and examples about recidivism and someone who commits the exact same crime and is how is different from someone who commits the same crimes but is arrested and charged and convicted of those crimes and then arrested and charged with CCE, and that both those people are the same. They've committed the same crimes. They are committing the same criminal enterprise. The only difference is that someone caught up with them first and arrested them and convicted them. That does not necessarily make one more of a recidivist than the other. If they can prove that a defendant is doing violation after violation as part of a criminal history, or I'm sorry, criminal enterprise, then it is the same type of criminal behavior as someone who is committing the same crime but is getting arrested for them. And
well, finally, even if someone isn't being convicted, the judge can make an adjustment to his criminal history category to reflect the fact that his record of convictions is not an accurate picture of his activity.
That's true, an upward adjustment, a departure. And also you see that in the RICO guideline, which says that if this does not adequately show...
Right. So that weakens your point.
Well... based on the language that the district court used as far as trumping, I don't agree with the government's spin on that word. I believe the district court meant by the plain language that it was not going to follow 4A1.2. It was going to follow the commentary to the guidelines.
If we accepted your argument and sent it back for resentencing, would you be subject to the similar exposure again?
I'm sorry?
Could you get the same sentence again?
Yes, Mr. Robinson could get the same sentence again. I don't think that's necessarily a reason to deny him this time. Repeat customers, you know, in some circles are considered good. Thank you, Your Honor, unless you have any further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Fader.